Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Faster Masters Rowing Radio. I'm Rebecca Caro, and today I'm joined, as always, by Marlene Royal.
Hello, everybody. Good to be here.
Yeah, here we go. It's week 11 of our lockdown podcast. And before we kick into the detail, I'm just going to take a little bit of time to run through and thank our sponsors who continue to support our show, and we are extremely grateful to them. So our first up, quick reminder about Blake Gourlay's book. Blake is also a presenter on the Rowing Chat Network. He presents a show that's called the Strength Coach Roundtable. He asks, are you looking for ways to improve? His new book, The Movement of Rowing, explains how movement limitations in your foot and your ankle affect a rower's performance, technique, and health. The book is loaded with self-screening strategies and solutions to help rowers reach their full potential. You can get the ebook and have 30% off it using a promo code ROWINGCHAT. Follow the link from our sponsors page, rowing.chat/sponsors. Secondly, as a man, do you find it hard to get dress shirts that actually fit your rowing body? Rowing Chat introduces William Marnie, the specialist shirt maker for athletes. You can get started with an exclusive 10% discount coupon, ROWINGCHAT10, and follow the link either in the show notes or again from our sponsors page. And lastly, we are about to close off our listener survey. And so if you haven't yet done it, and thank you to the five people who did it immediately after the show last week, we're very, very grateful to you. So Marlene, what's been your week? Where have you been up to?
Gosh, actually, it was a really busy week. Our club is in the process of getting permission to reopen. So that's probably was the focus of my week. You know, so we've had to comply with, we've had to do various risk assessment tools and apply to Rowing Quebec and write procedures and protocols and manuals and kind of cross a lot of T's and dot a lot of I's. So that definitely has been a big focus for me and our very little club, but important club this week. And you know, kind of, it's been an interesting week talking to people because we've had more regatta cancellations and just, I think, discussing with people like, you know, what are your long-term goals to stick to? I think that that's been a big topic of conversation with people, but I've really found that, you know, the people who are dedicated long-term athletes, you know, they're really taking everything in stride and totally like gung-ho to keep training. And I think they really value the importance of having a training plan right now. That's been a big comment from people. Just that's the motivation is, you know, I've got my plan and I'm going to stick to my plan because when competition resumes, I want to be ready. And so, you know, that's been kind of the, I would say that's been the conversation theme of the week for sure.
So
I think very great attitude. Yeah.
Yeah. We've been getting back on the water and we've started to see early injuries. And I will say to live, hello to you. And if you have a question or an observation, just write it in the chat box and we can bring it up and add you into the conversation, at least written. So put your opinions up. Mm-hmm. So my first injury, not my personally, but my doubles partner, we forgot our life jacket, our PFD, and he raced back into the clubhouse to go and pick it up, went into the men's changing room, slipped on the floor, and put out his hand to save himself. Didn't tell me. Oh. Walked into the boat. We rowed off and we got, I don't know, 15 minutes in, he said, can we stop? I need to stretch. I was like, well, yeah, sure. So we stopped. I said, what are you stretching? He said, my shoulder. I said, what's wrong with your shoulder? He said, and I said, I made a few choice words, as you people who know.
Oh, dear.
Me, Exactly. I told him what I thought. No, but we this morning a different person said they have a frozen shoulder, but luckily physiotherapists are open again. So he's going off to his physio. He can still row. Interestingly, the backwards and forwards plane is fine. It's the up and down and putting your arm, your hand.
Yeah, it's the rotation. Yeah, it's the rotation of the scapula that gets frozen, actually. But it's good that you bring that up, because that is a very, very serious topic right now. We did talk about that, I think, last week about transitioning to the water. And remember, we were talking about just easy, 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 take it easy, no more than 60 minutes. And Will Ruth did one of the U.S. rowing webinars about returning to sport, you know, or transitioning, especially after this time. And definitely the he quoted a number of different studies from NCAA and various agencies, and definitely if people return to training, I mean, the more you do after a transition, trying to go back to your previous level right away, I mean, the injury rate is very, very high. So the basic recommendation is for your sport that you're doing that's different. So for example, if you've been erging and running during the lockdown time, you can continue doing that as much as you've been doing that. But if you're changing activities, like, okay, now you're getting in the boat, that's where you have to have a gradual re-entry. So the recommendation is over the course of a month, basically 50, 30, 20, 10, which in our thinking, we all think it should be the other way around, but basically go back to 50% of what you were doing the first time. Week two, go to 70%. Week three, go to 80%. Week four, go to 90%. So say you were rowing five times a week, you know, go back to two sessions the first week, go back to maybe three sessions week two, go back to four sessions week three, you know, and then back to your 5 days a session by the fourth week. And that's a very, very, and very, very sensible. And funny, I was also listening to Tom Terhar's webinar, the U.S. women's coach. He said exactly the same thing. We've got women who were not rowing now for a couple of months, where they've been on the erg. We're starting to be able to transition back to singles. And he said, I have them maybe three times a week right now in the single, easy 60 minutes, no more than that right now on the water. Like, they're doing work on the erg, but they have been doing work on the erg, but as far as transitioning to the water. So, you know, that staying under 60 minutes and just keep it easy. So all those small muscles adapt, you know, it's a totally different range of motion than the erg. So it's not worth getting an injury now, but that was something that came up a few times this week also.
So we have listening live a message from Jessica DeCarlo. Oh.
Hi, Jessica.
Nice to see you with us. And also from Cece Aguda in Washington State. Hi, Cece.
Awesome.
Now, we got a great email this week.
Yeah, focus is everything. You know, staying on, having your plan, you know, without a plan. So.
Yeah, totally. Now, we got an email this week from the guys from the Rose and All website. They have decided, because they're very clever technical geeks, that they're going to do a speed order, which for non-Americans basically means a head rate timed, and you then produce a ranking of the athlete by speed. Now, that sounds completely normal, and it's exactly how something like the Head of the Charles runs, but he has written to us saying that Greg Benning, Sander Roosendaal, and Gregory Smith have organized a month-long on-the-water challenge over the Head of the Charles course on the River Charles. It's called the Charles River GPS Speed Order. You row the course in your own time with a device that will record your GPS data. Then you submit it to Roosendaal and enter it into the challenge. Your time on the course is automatically calculated and posted. And the challenge starts on the 1st of June, so it's been running for 2 days, and it continues, the last entries are on the 30th of June. And what they say is that they were hoping that they could get some speed orders done in other countries. So if, I mean, I'm guessing he also means other locations, because not every American rower is in Boston, Massachusetts. So the way it works, and this is right, this is the bit that fascinates me for the clever geeks, is that they have defined GPS gates. So in the way that you imagine a farm gate would work, it has two posts on either side, and obviously you pass through the middle. And on GPS, you can obviously define that precisely in latitude and longitude. So that if you are doing this event, you have to traverse the course within that broad margin, all the way around the corners and under the bridges, in order to be eligible for the event. And they did a trial on Lake Quinsigamond. Where's that, Marlene? Do you know where that is?
Quinsigamond. It's in Worcester, Mass. So it's just a little bit outside of Boston. That's where Greg Smith throws.
Ah, well, he's done a trial and it works. And they have also done a dry run already on the software on the Charles. So that's pretty exciting. So to take a look, the website is roseandall.com. I'm just going to show you some of the results that they've already done. So we're just going to head in here. And here's what I absolutely love. The headline says, "Do you want some hot singles action?" Which I think is delightful, obviously. This is only for single scholars. So here is the website. It's analytics.rosenall.com.
Oh, that's great.
And here is the course. Head of the Charles with gates. The distance is 4,599 meters. There you go. And the race window, they specified that here. And obviously, you can see all of these timing points. These are the gates that they have defined. And here is all of the detail that they have put up on their blog. And because they're trying to stick within the rules, it is only for single scholars. So here you go, Gregory Smith, bless him. He did it as a trial run. So that was great for him. And here is how he submitted his entry. So they've tried to make it super clear, so that everybody finds it straightforward.
That's great. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun.
You know, oh, definitely. And I mean, people need that boost right now, you know, and I'm sure New England people will go to Boston, just drive their singles down and go do it. You know, I think that sounds fantastic.
You could do it as a non-group activity and just accidentally all turn up on the same day.
Right. It's easy to social distance in a single. That is true.
Nice point. A few more watchers here. Lipine, who, no idea where you're from. Tell us if you're able to. Hello. And Ruth from Maryland. Hello, Ruth. I'll just write a little reply. There we go. So if you would like to do a speed order on your local river, get in touch with Sander and Gregory and Greg from, it's Rose and All. That's ROSANDALL.com. And maybe they'll help you set something up on your local river, which could be a ton of fun.
Really? I think that's awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
Now, last week, we started talking about how people are likely to be trying single sculling for the first time or returning to singling that maybe they hadn't done for a while. So when we were planning today, Marlene had a bright idea. Tell us your idea, Marlene.
Well, I thought we might want to talk about how to get into a single from the dock as well as from the water if you have to walk your boat in the water. The reason being, many people may be getting into singles right now who don't regularly row singles. And nobody really watches what you do on the water, but everybody does see what you do on the dock. So trying to look gracious or at least as if you know what you're doing on the dock is a big plus, especially when you're kind of new to the whole situation and dealing with a lot of equipment. So I'll give my little tips for doing that, and then Rebecca, she'll give us her little tips for doing it. But one of the things that I think really helps people is once they put the boat on the dock and you're standing, you've got your oars in, and you're about to get into the dock. One thing that really helps is to push your oar handles towards your shoes and butt the handles of the oars together like that. So and then put one hand over the top of them and just pull the handles back against each other a little bit so they're against the oar lock, and just pull up a tiny, tiny bit. That's going to allow you to put some weight on the handles when you step into the boat. So when you step into the boat, you can pull back on the handles a little bit and actually then kind of gracefully lower your weight down and then put your foot in one shoe. And that gives you a little bit more stability versus if you just overlap your handles, if you just overlap your handles and go to get in, you can't really put any body weight against it. So butting your handles helps. And if you know that you get into the boat, if one leg is better than the other one, or you have an issue with the knee, remember to put your boat in on that particular side of the dock where it's easier for you to stand on one leg and then pull back and then sit down in the boat. So that's one little tip that definitely helps getting in and out of the boat. And you can get out that way too. If you put your handles up in front of you, butt the ends together, hold over the end, you can actually, if you put one foot back, kind of pull yourself up so you can stand up in the boat and then step out.
That is the exact way that I teach people when they're first learning to row.
Oh, good.
Upward pressure on the handles. And it's very easy to demonstrate what not to do by having them do that thing of you say, putting the two oar handles together and then get them to push down on it. And of course, yeah. You all come off the water and there's instant instability. Exactly. So that really helps. Another thing that I will say, particularly with some athletes that I've worked with, is that they aren't strong enough to stand on one leg and step over into the boat. And it is absolutely fine, if that is your situation, to sit on the dock beside your boat. Easiest to do if someone else is holding the rigger for you, and then lift your butt across first onto the seat and then swing your feet over. And in fact, Tara Morgan, who runs the Seize the Oar Rowing Club in Seattle in Washington State, she teaches up to 8-year-olds in an eight. And so obviously these people have much more movement limitations. And she has a neat little solution. She has cut down some yoga gym mats and she lays the mat on the dock so that they always have something clean to sit on, because otherwise you're potentially in goose poo or something less pleasant. Mm-hmm. So that's quite nice. And then she said some of her athletes end up actually rolling out and coming out on all fours because that's what they can manage. If you cannot do that, that's great. It's nice to learn the correct way of getting into a single. Now, a few other things even before you get the boat on the water. Be organized. Have your water bottle, your oars, if you have an electronic meter, if you need a sun visor, sunglasses, whatever your things are, have them all down on the dock and near to where you're going to put the boat in the water before you start, because there's nothing worse than getting everything ready and then go, oh, I've forgotten whatever it is, and then having to race back. If you do have to, one thing to remember is put the oars in the oar locks and then the water side oar, pull it back towards the dock across the boat so that the spoon is actually right next to the gate, and then lay the oar onto the dock, and that just tilts the boat and weights it very slightly towards the dock so that it shouldn't, your boat shouldn't drift away while you've turned your back, which was a worry for me when I was first starting.
Right, yes.
When you're actually in the boat.
Yeah, I usually put both my oars down. Oh, go ahead.
Go.
Oh, I was going to say, when I put my oars down, usually I put whatever I need to take in the boat, I put it between the two oars. So there's, if it's a water bottle and a speed coach or whatever, you know, there's kind of like a set pattern that I know I should have four things, and there they are.
Exactly. That is excellent advice. If you can, when you step over into the boat, as Marlene described, with that upward pressure on the handle, if you can't stand on one leg and bend that knee and sort of lower yourself onto the seat, one other way of doing it is standing with both feet on the deck of the boat and then just squatting down. And then when your bum's on the seat, then extend your leg so that your foot goes in the shoe. Do, however, check that you haven't pushed the seat back so hard that it's actually right way behind your backstops and you can't reach it. That's very inelegant. And I've done it. And it, particularly when the wheels like ram up against the little backstop, you know, the rubber stoppers.
Yeah.
Just up a little bit so they're no longer in the groove.
That's bad. And it's hard to, it's actually, if your seat is behind you, it's hard when you're in the boat to get that seat up underneath you. If you've ever had to climb in from the water and your seat is behind you, you know, that's actually one of the hardest things, is to get one foot back and get up. The other thing is, some people walk in the water. For example, lots of clubs have beaches where they don't have a dock, and the range of motion of your knees, if you have that an issue, it is a little bit easier to get into a boat from the water. So you can do the same thing, but the oar handles together, so you've got kind of like a stable box against the riggers. You can, there are two ways, depending on how wide your boat is. If you're in a regular racing single, you can step over the boat, you can straddle it and then sit down and then bring your feet in. If you're in a boat that's maybe a recreational boat that's a little bit wide to do that, you can sort of turn and you can sit down on the seat sideways and then swing your legs in that way. But again, holding the oar handles together. So there are cases when getting in from the water is actually a lot easier than from a dock.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Now, when it comes to actually pushing away from the dock, if you're on your own, you've got two choices. One of them is to push away at 90 degrees. So you push off sideways. If you're going to do that, make sure that you hold both oars with one hand and lean the boat just a little bit away from the dock so that there's no chance that the bolt on your rigger like catches on the dock as you push off. And I always advise people to give the hardest possible shove. And if you put your hand on the dock and really push hard in an aggressive push, you should be able to get to a point where you have pushed away so that your oar is only half over the dock and half over the water. And then balance the boat with the oar that's just on the water side. And you can then pull in the other oar towards you a little bit and then put your blade vertical and use that vertical tip of your blade to push off the rest against the dock. Very important to do it vertically, because I was told if you do it horizontally, it distributes the pressure differently and it can split the tip of the blade. The cheater's way of doing it is to walk your boat down to the end of the dock and then just push off the end. And hopefully you then
that's what I do.
I'm shocked.
I love walking off the end of the dock.
Yeah, you can then just paddle straight off.
Walking the boat, right.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, you can see people who want to do this because they won't line up in the middle of the dock, because then you'd look like an idiot if you have to push your boat, 20 meters down to the end of the dock to get off the end.
True, right. So,
yeah, but time your arrival and just try it. Have a friend there, but try not to ask the friend for help would be my advice. That'll just give you the confidence. By the way, if you push off and it's not far enough, you are far better going back in and pushing off a second time rather than trying to struggle your way out. Because basically, if your rigger is still overlapping the edge of the dock, there is no way you can push off with that oar. You just can't. The geometry doesn't work. So hold your oars with one hand and lean over. Keep that upward pressure. Lean toward the dock and you can probably get it with your fingertips and you can just like pull it ever so gently and pull yourself back in and then give a bigger shove. Any last bits?
Yeah, that's sort of. If you get really confident, you know, you can always go to the standing up and pushing off with one foot, but you know, you can save that. And I think in the beginning, just try to manage your weight gracefully. And if you have some range of motion limitations, you know, a knee issue or a hip issue, pay attention to which side is easier to get in. And, you know, if you do need to sit down on the dock and just scoot in, and that's the easiest way to do it and the safest, just do it that way. That there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But
we rowers are dreadful show-offs. Now we have a question from Jessica DiCarlo, who's watching live. She says, Rebecca, did you show your rowing photos in last week's podcast? If so, I somehow missed them when I was catching up. I enjoyed seeing Marlene's photos and was looking forward to seeing yours. So Jess, the short answer is yes, we did. But if you're a Faster Masters member and you have a paid subscription for us, it is the bonus in this month's module. So if you go to the bonus module, you will see every single picture, and we then put links from there into the podcast, time-stamped to the perfect start point. And you can then listen to us talking through what the pictures are and what they represent and our somewhat hilarious memories. Now, some of the training that we're going to be doing in the coming weeks involves rate changes. Rate changes are completely normal in training. They're also normal in a race. So we thought today we'd have a little focus on how to change rate. Marlene, what's your high-level advice?
I think when you're changing rates, the first thing that you want to work on is trying to make a clear definition from one rating to the other one. So these don't necessarily have to be high rates either. We're just talking about making a change and learning how to do that ideally in one stroke. So if you're going from 18 to 20, one of the things that I focus on a transition stroke is you want to bring the speed up through the water. You know, you want to move the boat by improving your speed on the dry versus trying to race faster on the recovery. So on a transition stroke, usually what I will focus on is a little bit of extra leg drive, the last quarter of the leg drive. So if I'm going from 18 to 20 on that transition stroke, I really focus on that last third of the drive and make sure that that last third of the leg drive is really strong and try to bring up the handle speed. So the handle accelerates a bit more into the body and away from the body, but it comes from increasing the speed on the drive and try to do that just enough that you can bump the rating up, say one, you can even practice doing it one beat at a time. You know, and two beats, you know, traditionally we always talk about 18 to 20, 20 to 22, but it's really fun to go like 20 to 21, 21 to 22, and try to get a sense of what you've got to do of, you know, maybe you think about a 110% focus leg drive and try to get the handle speed moving away from you a little bit quicker to bring that stroke rate up one or two.
And if you're in a crew boat, my advice is for the person who's doing the calls, give the crew advance notice. I generally allow them three strokes. And so what I tend to do is I'll call the fact that we're going to go up. So we're going to go up to 22. And then I say the word sharpen. And sharpen has a meaning more than just be sharp. It tells the crew to make the movement that Marlene just described, that movement of a slightly increased acceleration in the second half of the power phase, moving your handles around the finished turn a little more quicker so that you start to begin to get the boat moving a tiny bit faster. You're not actually really changing rate at this point. You're just focusing the acceleration. So after I've said sharpen, and I usually give them two strokes, to do a two sharper strokes. And then on the third stroke, I say change. And then we give ourselves a further three strokes to take the rate up. Now, when you're going up 2 points from 20 to 22 or 18 to 20 or odd numbers, it's very easy. You can actually change rate in about one stroke. But the reason I choose three is because it means that no one has to make a sudden change. It means the changes are incremental and actually really small. And that's important for maintaining the rhythm and maintaining the boat speed so that people get to know that they don't have to rush. Of course, rushing is one of those big, big things that kills speed.
Yeah, that's a nice exercise to practice in the single, you know, and see what, if you're in the single, see what works best for you. In a crew, obviously you have to know for your crew, you have to have a set plan. Like you have to know, okay, this is what sharpen means. This is what sharpen means, this one. So you should determine when you're back in your crew boats, you should determine a set pattern of what you do when you make a transition, either with your coxswain or the person who's calling the commands in a straight book. But everybody should be on the same page. That's the important thing. You know, how you do it, it's up to you. And it depends on the skill of the crew. They might need a little bit more time versus a more experienced crew, but just do the same thing. That's the important thing. Yeah, cooperate with each other.
Have that conversation first so that you all know what the word means. And to be honest, it doesn't matter what the word is. It can be fried eggs. Just understand that. In fact, have I got time for a story?
I think so.
So yes. We were in an eight and Gemma was coxing us. And it was the weekend before a really big head race. So the head of the river race in London. And we were practicing. And there were a lot of visiting crews from other clubs who obviously had come to practice steering on the river and so on. And Gemma called us up and down the cox box, she says, okay, sharpen, and we're now going to move through this driftwood. And as she said that, we started to overtake another crew. And after the outing, we said to her, hey, Gemma, that was kind of rude calling that crew driftwood. And she said, I wasn't talking about them. There is a barge moored on the river, which is a trap to trap floating debris. And it basically goes with the tide. It has a flap that opens at one end when the tide's flowing in one direction, so rubbish can flow in. And then the trap drops when the tide turns, and it traps the rubbish. And it's called the driftwood barge. And we never know it had a name.
The other boat probably thought, oh, who's she? You know,
cocky so-and-sos. Well, because we all laughed about it, this then became a secret call for that crew. When we were racing later on in the season, when we got to the summer side by side, and she had a call that she wanted us to push past another crew, she would just say driftwood. And we knew.
It's like saying 256, and everybody knows what that means, right? Like it reminds me of the Boys in the Boat. I think in the Boys in the Boat, you know, they had their secret their commands, which everybody knew, like the whole practice of where that came from. You know, like they knew the whole story behind every command, but they had their, you know, like one word commands that everyone knew what that meant. You know, and you need that as a crew. You need your secret weapons.
Yeah. And then nobody else knows what it means.
Exactly.
Now, in the last podcast, we made oblique reference to the challenge of changing rates around a specific rating zone. And this is between 24 and 26. So if you imagine you're in a big boat and you're changing rate from 22 to 24 to 26 to 28, sometimes you do exercises like pieces like ladders where you'll do 20 firm, 10 light and like take it up two each time. And in smaller boats, the transition happens at around 24. And in big boats, it happens around 26. And if anyone listening has ever done this, you may remember that it's incredibly hard to kind of get past that rate, that you're like, why are we sticking at 26 in the eight? We know we can rate 32, 34. Why are we having such a challenge? And Marlene and I talked about it last week and said, this is a topic for another day. So here it is, the other day. I know why this happens, and it's a quirky thing that you're going to have to go and practice it for yourself and tell me how it works for you. But here is my theory. My thesis is that when you're changing rates at lower rates, so below 24 if you're in small boats or below 26 if you're in big boats, you can actually make the rate go up 2 points simply by working harder on the power phase, so pushing the boat through the water a little faster, and moving around the finish just with a little more fluidity, just like Marlene described. And you can basically muscle it. You can just be tougher, work a little bit harder, and the rate comes up, and then you actually don't need that increased level of work. You can go back to the same level of work you were doing before. However, something happens at around this 24, 26 rate where that technique no longer works. And you have to make the rate go up with a different technique. And the technique that I have observed is by moving your whole body more dynamically. So you need to go legs, back, arms in that sequence through the power phase, and you actually need to do it faster. It's not just achievable by driving your legs harder. So you need to move more dynamically. It's like if you were doing a squat jump and I told you that you needed to jump a little bit higher. So what you do is first, you know, you just start using your muscles and working harder, and then you've got to do it faster. And that actually involves you using a different set of muscles, possibly fast twitch muscles. And you actually have to move more dynamically and more athletically in order to get past that rating. And that is my theory about how and why I think these intermediate rates of 24 and 26 are actually really difficult.
Oh, they are challenging. They're definitely, and actually you have to kind of, you almost, as you said, you have to put your whole body into it. So you actually have to, you know, you have to get swing, you have to focus on building up, you have to take it up with momentum, using your whole body weight, you know, and using your drive suspension. And, you know, there is, life is different, I think, when you get to, in a single, for sure, you know, 24 is a really tricky rate to row. I know in my serious training days, a rate of 24, I was sitting exactly on my anaerobic threshold. That was my rate for anaerobic threshold. If I was 26, so it was a little bit high, but you know, I could sit right on 24 and stay where to stay. I think practicing 26, or if you're in your single doing some longer distance trials at 26 is excellent practice. And work on that momentum, because as we were talking about, you want to bring this up through the water. You have to bring this up through the drive and with the rhythm change. You know, the rhythm change helps bring your whole body weight into that. You don't want to try to pull and struggle the boat up. You're not going to get anywhere. You're just going to do a lot of hard work without making the boat go faster. So you have to think of it as it's a more holistic rate change, I would say.
So here is a little drill for you to practice. I would like you, when you're out on your next outing, and it doesn't matter if this is on the erg or on the water, I would like you to do a 15-stroke power burst. So go to firm pressure, and the burst is going to start at a rate of 18, and each stroke, you're going to take the rate up 1 point. So it will go 18, 19, 20, 21. And so 15 strokes will take you up to around 30, and see how you go. Watch your meter so you can see each stroke, whether you're accurately judging the change that's needed to take the rate up one for the next stroke. And then you come back and tell us, how did you go? Did you breeze through this apparently difficult thing, or did you kind of stall at 24 and then suddenly jump to like 27 and then find you yeah. go fine from 27, 28, 29?
That's a very fun drill. And actually now in this transition, okay, once you're in the boat a week or two and you just want to do some fun stuff, things like this, like you want to, if you're doing your steady rowing at 18 or 20, you can toss in something like this, like a 15, like this 15 stroke building drill where you go up one every stroke, or a 20 or 30 second acceleration, because these are still anaerobic. And you're not going to build up any lactic acid when you do this type of little drill that takes less than 40 seconds. And that's something that you can, when you're starting to feel you want to move a little bit faster than just steady rowing, you can pop these in every couple minutes. And it isn't going to raise the intensity of the workout a lot, because you're still basically staying in an anaerobic zone. You're not going to be developing any serious lactic acid from doing these short little accelerations, but they're fantastic for your coordination and your blade work. And they're just fun. You know, can I do it? Can I do it? Oh, I missed that one. Oh, you know, you start seeing like which ratings are easy to transition to and which ones are your nemesis. So
exactly. So that's it. So the drill is called a 15 stroke speed up. So I call it a speed up so that it differentiates it from, you know, just doing a burst. It's also deeply useful for mm-hmm. early practice for racing starts, because racing starts, although not as structured as that, do start with actually quite a low cadence of stroke rate, and they get faster and faster and faster. And it'll give you a really good clue, particularly in your crew boats, which ratings you start to lose your technique at. So as you get more refined and skillful at doing higher rates, mm-hmm. you might find that you get to 26, 27, and the technique and the balance goes a bit, and it all goes a bit, as they say in New Zealand, it all turns to custard. And you know, you might practice it a few more times in a week's time. You find that the custard moment doesn't happen until you're at 29, which is cool, because it then shows you, you know, you've really stepped up and you've managed to improve your skill.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And it's great for blade depth, not going too deep. I mean, it works on all of these things, because you have to be clean and sharp and together if you're in a crew. I love things like that. Those are fun.
And Cece, who's watching, has remarked she really liked the drill in the Faster Masters training plan that's 20 strokes, where you go up 2 strokes a minute every 5 strokes, interspersed into your steady state. So the program she's describing, it's a 20-minute piece, and every 5 minutes you do 15 strokes at a slightly higher rate. And for this month, it's 24 if you're in a small boat, or 26 if you're in a bigger boat. And then after you've done those 15, you go back to your rate 18 to 20 for another 4 minutes. And then when you roll on to the 5th minute, you do another 15.
Yeah, and they're not exhausting either. They're not meant to be. They're just, they're coordination drills, blade work drills, but they're not so long that it's going to, as we said, it's not going to really change the overall physiological effect of the workout. It's still going to be a lower intensity workout, but you know, we need spice every now and then. So
it breaks it up. It gives you little markers as well. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Faster Masters, this has been Faster
yeah.
Masters.
Yeah, it's run. Fun. It's fun. I mean, training should be interesting, you know, and that's one thing I would encourage people. Always experiment, try things. Variation is so important, but it's important for developing your skills that, you know, do something really ridiculous.
yeah, don't get me started on ridiculous things to do. There are so many. Do send us your comments and remarks, and remember, we haven't had any answers yet from last week's challenge, which is, can you tell your rating without using an electronic device? So that was the challenge. So you should know what your core ratings are and what they feel like. So do give us some feedback on that. You can do that either on our YouTube channel or you can do it on the Facebook page. And then, of course, the new challenge this week is to do a 15-stroke speed up and see how you go. So this has been Faster Masters Rowing Radio for lockdown week 11. We might change the title of the podcast for now. But the people who came back to us when we asked last week said they liked the weekly format. So Marlene and I will struggle on. The key is for you guys to stay interested. And if we're not telling interesting stuff, that's cool. We'll just save it up and do a bigger podcast once a month. So till next week. That's goodbye from me, Rebecca Caro, and from Marlene Royal.